At this time of year, we, and this in the fall and in the spring, we become so aware of the quick passage of time. Every day is a little shorter. The trees are falling and the animals are getting ready for the winter. And man takes in their harvest and prepares for the winter as well. And he observes that of the animals and plants, you know, only the strong survive the winter. Man, having a mind, has a little more control over his environment, and so he can plan ahead, he can take the harvest, he can decide what he's going to do with the harvest. And so over the winter, that's a time of thinking and planning, taking the best seeds and deciding where it's going to be put. Typically, in the traditional rural society, people would also have a little more leisure. The harvest was in, there was no seeding, no plowing. They could spend a little more time, and because of the cold, cultures tend to gather together around fires and share their social warmth. And we're doing that today, even though in our 21st century urban civilization, we don't have any more leisure in the fall than we do in the summer, but we still do have these times when we get together and we give thanks, many cultures, and we remember many cultures, and in the Kabbalah and philosophy, we're gathering. A weekend or two ago, the Prairie Centers had their fall supper, and last night we had, here at 5912, we had a country and western dinner and sing-along, and soon we have our craft fair coming when we attract students from far and wide and many guests into our hall here. And as Kabbalarians, we know how rich our harvest is compared to the harvest of the average person. We have confidence that if we follow the principles of the Kabbalarian philosophy, we will have a happy, healthy, and successful life. And we are always very warm with people. But I thought we would breathe this morning on the concept of fellowship, of just being aware of giving that warmth of our principle from within to the people we meet, and to the people that come and visit us, and try to reach their spark and inspire them to find out what we have that's different, how they can become like us. So if you would join me in 3 deep breaths to focus our minds on the concept of fellowship and Kabbalarian warmth attracting more Kabbalarians. Thank you. This morning we have a speaker who has spoken many times for the students and for the public and has given many of the classes. She is also very involved in the organization and the running of the day-to-day aspects of the Kabbalarian philosophy. She is the president of the Society of Kabbalarians of Canada, and our topic this morning is the breath of life. And so please give a big welcome to Lorenda Bardell to tell us about the breath of life.
Thank you, Good morning, everyone. The breath of life, something that's a very important topic.
The moderator has left the conference.
Oxygen exists in the water as part of the water molecule, and in the enormous variety of rocks and minerals found in soils, and in other ways as well. So let's go to plants. So oxygen is released from plants through the process of photosynthesis, which you all remember from the school days, and how with the plants, there's this balancing of oxygen and carbon dioxide in the air. So plants produce the oxygen, which we very much need, and we give off the carbon or breathe out the carbon dioxide, which plants need in order to for this process of photosynthesis to work. And so you recall back at school days how photosynthesis means putting together with light. So all the green plants absorb the sunlight and combine carbon dioxide and water to make sugar and oxygen. And so the oxygen goes into the air which we breathe. So now water. Water, too, is also essential for life. And we think about how much water there is on this planet. We think about ourselves and how much water is a part of us. So really, it's a major component for all life forms, and most animals and plants contain over 60% of water by volume. And so we know that without water, there would be no life on this planet. So we recognize all the various ways in which oxygen becomes a part of water through the turbulence of water, the tides, and the water is going into streams and trickling over rocks. So it's the movement of water, and then the atmospheric pressure, where the pressure of the air forces the air into the water and forces the oxygen into the water, and then how oxygen is also produced by algae and aquatic plants through photosynthesis. We know that water has a very simple atomic structure, two parts hydrogen atom combined with one oxygen atom. And just thinking about the water molecule, it's probably the only or is the only substance on Earth that exists in all three physical states of matter, in the solid, liquid, and the gas. And of course, that whole process is relative to the heat exchange on Earth, and water plays such an important part in the redistribution and distribution of heat energy in the Earth's atmosphere. So in terms of heat being transferred into the atmosphere, approximately three-quarters of this process is accomplished by the evaporation and condensation of water. So then we go to the kingdoms within the water. We have the fish and the whales and the dolphins and the crabs and the seabirds. and just about everything else that makes a living off the oceans. But those forms owe their existence to what's called phytoplankton, which are the one-celled plants that live on the ocean surface. And the one-celled plants living on the ocean surface use the energy from the sun to, again, convert carbon dioxide and nutrients into complex organic compounds, which form new plant material. So then we have the herbivorous creatures that eat the phytoplankton, and then we have the carnivores, in turn, that eat the herbivores, and so goes the chain of life to the top predators like the sharks. So phytoplankton needs two things for survival, and again, that's the energy from the sun and the nutrients from the water. And phytoplankton absorb both across their cell walls. So in this process of photosynthesis, phytoplankton also releases oxygen into the water. And half of the world's oxygen is produced in that way. And the other half, of course, is by the shrubs and the trees and the grasses coming from the soil. Then we think about our rainforests and how important they are to the overall expression of this oxygen that we need in order to live. And, of course, we know that the rainforests are very important for many reasons. And, again, they turn the carbon dioxide into clean air, and which helps to fight the pollution. Also, the rainforests absorb a lot of carbon dioxide just in their organic materials, and they help to offset the greenhouse effect, whereby some of our human activities that aren't thought out carefully enough, and we tend to overbalance or the gases that are in the atmosphere that are necessary, that should be balanced in order to regulate the Earth's temperature. So the trees of the rainforest store the carbon dioxide in their roots and their stems and leaves and branches. So when those forests are destroyed, then the carbon that they contain is released into the atmosphere and poses problems. Now, rainforests also release vast amounts of oxygen into the atmosphere, but they also absorb a lot of oxygen through the decay of organic matter. So rainforests act like giant reservoirs of moisture and warmth, releasing water throughout the year into the streams and rivers that support, really, the lives of billions of people. So in doing this research, we come to the realization that oxygen plays a very powerful primary role in the expression of every living thing in this living Earth, and particularly for humanity. So the most vital element on Earth is the oxygen, because without it, the Earth could not exist and we could not exist. We could carry on maybe not eating for a while, but it would be a matter of moments without oxygen and we wouldn't survive. So about 90% of the life energy is created by oxygen. And all human functions are regulated by oxygen. Our brain processes, you know, the billions and bits of information that are processed every day that go through our thinking, it's largely due to oxygen. And, of course, we know and we do, again, thinking about it and in our own studies in the Caballerian philosophy, that oxygen dramatically aids the nervous system response and promotes the brain function. It can relieve mental fatigue and restore mental clarity to optimum levels. So even in many circles, further afield in the Caballerian philosophy, there is this thought that lack of oxygen in human cells and tissues is the underlying root cause of many of the chronic diseases of today. So, of course, we have a creed in our Caballerian philosophy school, is I believe in daily deep breathing for a clear mind and a healthy body. Mr. Parker, the founder of the Cavalarian philosophy, said that the most vital function of all is breathing, and that we don't think enough about it in relationship to its relationship to our physical fitness, to our mental development, and spiritual progress. He spoke a lot about and wrote about how many of the respiratory diseases are a direct result of not using the full lung capacity. So many people use so little of the lung capacity, and then we wonder why we suffer with, you know, H1N1 and this bug and that bug and whatever. There has to come a realization that our whole body is fed and vitalized through the bloodstream, and the bloodstream is vitalized through the breath of life. And in order for the body to do its job, there's got to be this proper vitalization through the breath of life, through the breathing process, and of course we know the eating of good foods. The vitalization of the body is accomplished by the utilization, though, of an even greater energy than the oxygen from the breath through the deep breathing exercises. We touch upon and talk about this a lot in our Healthy Living course. And, of course, we know that this powerful energy is prana. So in Hindu tradition, prana is the life-sustaining force that pervades all living organisms and the universe. So every breath we take, every mouthful of liquid or solid we consume is charged with this vital force known in the East as prana. And in Hindu concept, its prana is the sum total of all cosmic energy. So without prana, there could be no motion of any kind, and all cosmic manifestation would fade into a state of dark, motionless potential. So although everything contains prana, it's really the most accessible in the breath that we breathe. And even though it's neither the oxygen or the nitrogen, it's the energy that vitalizes the two. And without prana, then oxygen and nitrogen wouldn't exist. So in furthering these thoughts, of course, we know that the Cavalarian interpretation is that everything in life is a form of energy, and prana is the energy of life, and it's expressing in all things in an intelligent way, in the whole functioning of the earth, in the oceans, in the wind, the rocks, and the soils, and the animals, and the birds, and people. Everything is an expression of prana. So what is prana? Well, prana is what gives intelligence to this whole process that goes on upon our earth. It's the intelligent power, the intelligence of the universe, you could say, expressing in life as an energy. And in the Cavalarian philosophy, we term that universal intelligence or reason. So when we think about all the kingdoms that are beneath humankind, we see the expression of this universal intelligence as every species lives and grows and accomplishes its purpose or reason instinctively. So now we come to the little baby that's born. And that baby is born. The most important function for it to live is to have that first breath of life. And it's like all of a sudden a switch being turned on that starts a motor. And so with that first breath of life, the body starts to function, if it's a healthy baby, in an intelligent way. The heart beats, the digestion works, and all the myriad of ways that life is activated and begins to grow with that first breath and then the continuation with every other breath after that. So what came with the breath of life beyond the elemental components? Again, it's this power of life, this universal intelligence that activates growth, and that's the power of prana. And throughout a child's lifetime, that prana is activated in so many ways. The physical body continues to grow day by day by day, from babyhood through teen years to adulthood, to old age and petering off. and also through the prana works through the mind. As the mind grows and develops through education and analysis and experience, and then the eventual fulfillment of some kind of a purpose in life. And if a child comes to understand the physical, mental, and spiritual laws, then there is a beautiful fulfillment for the human potential. Where does that power go at death? It just is. Where does electricity go when we turn off the lights? It just is. It's just waiting for a lamp to be turned on again, and there's the electricity. And it's so, too, with the expression of prana. It just is. And it's a power, the intelligent power that motivates the growth, the energies of life in an intelligent way. Now, with the human family, we don't fulfill our purposes instinctively, as do the kingdoms beneath. It's more challenging for each of us to figure out, well, what is our purpose? Because we come under a different law, and that's known as the conscious law. It's not instinctive anymore. We have a mind to think and analyze and come to conclusions. And so we have to seek our purpose. But there is a way, as we all know. So Kabbalarians see life through the law of duality. We think about life, it's like a circle. We draw that circle and we see no beginning and no end, the continuation of life for always. When we divide that circle in half, we have the reason or the abstract on one part, the blueprint of life, you could call it universal intelligence, and then we have the reality of life, what we see, all the demonstrations of this intelligent power expressing on this finite plane of realism. And we look around and we see everything unfolding the way it should. And yes, there's the laws of survival, and some plants and animals don't make it, but that's part of this whole business of living in this on this earth. So really, the expression of prana in life is the expression of purpose in all living things, the growth to fulfillment of the reason for being. And often when I think about, you know, the wars that go on, you think, how long is this kind of a lifestyle going to last? When are we ever going to come to the point to realize, even doing some research and realizing how everything is so interconnected and we're so dependent upon each other, and, you know, we're dependent upon a plant. And the plants depended upon us, and it's like a beautiful tapestry, and how every thread in that tapestry is so important to the overall ornamental beauty of the finished product. And so, again, we have another creed, is that we must respect all nature and should not hurt in word or deed, because everything is linked and everything does play a part and must be respected for its purpose. So each person is born with a spiritual purpose, a reason for being. And that inner potential can be measured from the time of birth. And really, that purpose should be the nucleus around which our whole life revolves. Every decision we make should be linked to that potential. Should I be doing this? Is this linked to my potential? Or should I be doing something else? Is this going to take me further along in life to the fulfillment of my purpose? And so then we see that our purpose then is linked to the expression of our thinking, our mind, through language. And really, in the bigger picture of life, our minds are capable of deciphering to some degree this bigger potential of life and what it all means. But first, we have to understand what is mind, and how is it created, and how does it function, and what creates our personality, and how can we understand the power that's behind our mind, how it creates our lives and creates our destiny and our experiences. Well, Mr. Parker said that there are two distinct powers that mold the mind, and the first is the balance of mind through name and the knowledge of the spiritual principle. And then the second is this function of breathing to give vitality to the emotions and the brain cells so that the process of thinking becomes very strong and empowered and creates a vital personality. So going back to the first power, the Kabbalarian philosophy does teach the relationship between mathematics and language. And we all recognize that it's the consistency of language and its mathematically positioned letters in the alphabet that makes it measurable. And so that we all, in the Kabbalarian philosophy, it's common that we change our names. And because we know that name is a very powerful influence. We talk about, everybody knows in life, and everybody says, oh yes, life is energy, but as soon as the thought is presented, well, your name is energy, and was it given to you through a basic principle, then there's a little hesitation without realizing that everything in life can be measured mathematically. And so every letter in any alphabet carries a certain quality of intelligence, just like every key on the piano is a degree of sound. And we play, if we know music, we can play a beautiful harmonious piece. The same way with name. We create names that are balanced. Names, and what does that mean? But balanced to our inner potential, so that our potential and mind are on the same wavelength, and then we can accomplish what we're meant to accomplish in life if we learn to understand what our inner potential means. And so this concept of balance of name is really important to each person's lifelong happiness and success. And then with the development of breathing, that really is the attractive factor. It's the power that will take us to the accomplishment of our ideals and goals. So when we take long, deep, rhythmic breaths and we fill up our lungs to capacity without creating tension, that breath makes its way, it fills the lungs and then makes its way to the nervous system, to the solar plexus. And the solar plexus is, as we know, that network of nerves that lies behind the stomach. And we term that the body battery. It's the reservoir of our life force, our life energy in the solar plexus. And from the solar plexus, then, the breath channels that energy to all parts of the body needing intention. And if we learn to do our rhythmic breathing all day long as we can without creating tension, with a proper focused thought, we can do more to maintain the health of our body, because we know that that energy can be used to vitalize our thinking, to overcome tiredness and exhaustion, and just that stronger focus to accomplish the things that we do day by day. We all know how we feel when we're not well and we have a cold and the nose is stuffed up. And it's a challenge to feel good because the nose has that purpose of taking in the breath and the nerves that go up into the brain cells. And one of the points is people that are mouth breathers. It's very debilitating to be a mouth breather. We all have to be aware at times if we're under stress, all of a sudden you could find yourself breathing through our mouths. And it's better if we can always remember to breathe through the nose, because that's where the filtering of the air happens and where the air is warmed. And mouth breathing, as we know, dries out the mouth. And mouth breathing, too, is often associated with abnormalities in the upper respiratory tract. But all of this has an effect upon our thinking. And often you'll find that mouth breathers don't have the same amount of concentration and focus as do those who breathe through your nose. So it's a reminder for all of us to breathe through the nose. Shallow breathing, too, is detrimental to one's overall physical and mental health. Sick people, you notice sick, anybody, you get sick or we get sick ourselves, what the first thing that happens is the breathing becomes shallower. And even when people are getting close to the end of their life, often the breathing will become shallower. So we can see the impact that if we could learn to do, to take advantage of the deep breath and the long, deep, rhythmic breathing, how it is the life-sustaining power. Because without breath, there's no life and no purpose. So long, just thinking of ways about the deep breathing, it oxygenates the blood and raises the energy of the whole system, speeds up the brain cells, quickening one's thinking. It strengthens the organs of the body, starting off with the respiratory organs and other bodily functions, and makes us less vulnerable to flus and sicknesses. And today, that's a really important point, too, even as Caballarians, that with all this fear that's going around about the sickness and this epidemic that's going to overtake us if we don't run fast enough, we have to really focus on keeping up our deep breathing and keeping ourselves strong, because the breath also strengthens the lymphatic system and the bloodstream, and it creates the greater energy to handle stressful situations. We know it has a calming and relaxing influence, and when it's combined with a peaceful mind and a giving mind, we can overcome many nervous tensions. It can help us to dissipate moods and all the other things that I'm sure everybody's thought about and could add to the list. One example I was reading again was how Mr. Parker, the founder of the Caballarian philosophy, witnessed and assisted through his knowledge of positive breathing as applied to resuscitation of drowned persons. And he was able to help bring a drowned person, after being in the water for over an hour, bringing them back to life through this process of the breath and prana. So it's an amazing thing, the breath of life. And we teach many breathing exercises in the Caballarian philosophy. So if we come to understand ourselves more and more through an understanding of our potential and what we're striving to accomplish in our lives, we strive to every day apply the principle in some way and use that breathing energy, we could build such a strong energy around this organization that would draw people to us. We know that can happen. And if we could share this with other people, we know that over time, the evils of life and the destructive emotion that expresses itself would slowly be eliminated. And we would work like that tapestry, one with each other, and working to create the balance on this Earth planet. It's a tall order, but it's possible, and it comes through an understanding of the principles that we do have in the Caballarian philosophy. So everything has a purpose. We have to find our purpose and use the vital energies of prana and the breath to fulfill our destiny, and to have the thought that we have to leave this place better for our having lived here. So to that end, the Caballarian philosophy is dedicated.
Thank you, Lorenda. That was an inspiring thought to carry us forward through the next week. Every moment of the day, every breath we breathe, be thinking of what we're doing. To complete this morning, we have a sound bite, a 15-minute segment from a class that was given a number of years ago, and it is on the topic, or the question rather, of our mind and spirit separate? So with a prayer to the gods of the technical functions, I'm sure that we will have a little sound bite.
On each other. Spirit and mind, spirit is only a concept of mind. Spirit is only a plane of mind. We say, person, when we speak of the spirit, we're speaking of the abstract. We're speaking of a quality, a man's spiritual, or a man's mechanical. It's just designating a certain plane of thinking. A spiritual individual is a fellow who lives from other things than to stuff his stomach and satisfies his desires and just live a life of Riley. A person spiritual is cognizant of the fact that somewhere there must be a divine plan that's been overlooked. Somewhere we should be doing something, all of us, and somewhere it's been overlooked. Nobody knows what we should be doing. And so, therefore, the world's in a confusion because not having a definite idea, we're substituting silly things in place of it. You know, getting lost in sports and silly things and wasting our time where we could be better spent doing something more constructively or thinking something. So, we've got to have an ideal and try to follow it. And that ideal, of course, if it's spiritual, it means that you must be about your Father's business. That the Father has a business upon this earth, and we are the channel for that business. And the business is to bring harmony and balance into life. First in the physical sense, and if we all had a basic principle that we all followed, every religion follows one basic principle, then we wouldn't be having unseasonal weather. We wouldn't be having winter weather in summer, and summer weather in winter, and a wet spring and dry springs and all kinds of seasons that were destructive to crops. The great principle of reason set up the world to evolve and revolve around its sun and to be governed by the minds upon this earth, then there's no limit to the governing power of that mind. Weather conditions or all other conditions, the human mind should be able to control. Now, we wouldn't control it by sitting certain posts here and saying, now you concentrate on this like weather stations. But because we were all studying life, and following a pattern, a definite pattern, knowing full well that you can't do this or can't do that no more than you can jump out of a 15-story window and land on your feet lightly. When you know you can, and when we know those things, that you can't do certain things, because the law of action and reaction is too strong, when we know that and don't do those things, that's the time we will change weather conditions. Weather conditions will change automatically with the universal concept of humanity. As we know those things, and don't try to test them, you know, and confuse the issue, then we won't have to worry about season, unseasonal weather. Spring, summer, autumn, winter will come just as it should come, rhythmically, just like a clock. There won't be any deviations. Only we cause the deviations, that's all. So, explain the our spirit and mind separate from each other? No, spirit and mind are not separate from each other, except through degrees, like I was to draw a rule on this day on a blackboard here, a long rule with graduations in it, you know, all the way down, like a ladder. Take like a ladder, for instance, against your house. Number one rung is number one rung. You're just off the earth, taking off. Second rung, you're beginning to take off more, gaining altitude. Third rung and fourth rung, you're gaining more altitude. Now you're up to the second story. You can see in the window, if you're the window washer, and maybe you might try the third story windows. Well, they're all part of the house, but one is the attic and the other is the foundation or the first floor. It's all house, but it's the different measurements of the house, and so it is with mind. If your mind is fed up or satiated or satisfied, should we say, even with physical things as they are and knowing what they are and even where they belong for people who want them, if you want to waste their time doing certain things, let them waste their time, don't bother. If you've risen above that where you want to find something and give something to those hungry minds that are seeking something that haven't found yet what you found, well, then you're lifting their minds above the mundane things, given a searching for the reason of being, and they're having found the reason, applying it, and proving to your fellow man that you found the reason of being. And find the joy of thinking and the joy of right living. That's when you become spiritual. What difference would there be, we have been told in the past by many other philosophers that your spirit is like, your soul is your spirit, like a kite on the end of a string. Some fellow may come along sometime and cut the kite, and you've lost your soul. But your soul isn't an appendage, nor is any spirituality an appendage. It's merely an awakening spirituality with a broadening vision. As your concept broadens, your vision broadens, you learn to rise above fiddling little things. You can't master them, to rise above them so they can't even touch you. They don't even notice them, they're so small and insignificant. Then your mind's broadening, your concept's broadening. With that grows power and strength. As you learn that little fiddling things can't hurt you, you know. You're like, you know, we used to say as kids, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. What a wrong thing to tell people, kids. There's just a wrong way around. They were saying, cart before the horse. The words are far more important than the sticks and stones. So that's how we grow. And as our concept grows, we no longer satisfy being lost in the mundane things like mechanics and science and all that junk. It's all right for a curious mind. But if you want to find the reason of being, the reason we have scientists for one thing, then you've got to search into higher planes of thought. And you reach the higher planes of thought like a balloon going up, so it begs the sand off to give it more buoyancy. So we do the same thing. Throw those fiddling things off that we know are holding us back. We know they're upsetting us. We're allowing them to do so. Get big and broad, and we leave them behind just like even the sand off the balloon. The balloon goes straight up like that. So we can go straight up. Learn to know ourselves. First analyze ourselves and say, this is what we need to expunge from our nature right here, and it's going to go as fast as it can go. The faster it goes, the quicker your mind will go into a spiritual state, and the quicker great thoughts will come to you and power will come to you. Explain. Explain something, then there's the word master. With A-N-O-A-L-T-A-S-T. Explain, we'll say explain master. Leave that word out. Can't read it anyway. As I understand it, when a person reaches spiritual attainment, the mind and spirit become one. And when that person dies, their spirit of mind dissolves. The spirit of mind dissolves into the whole and lose individuality. When a person reaches spirit, the mind and spirit become one. Oh, I see, they're separate, then they become one, mind and spirit. But as I said before, spirituality is only a state of mental development anyway. And if we would just do one thing, just to realize that every one of us upon this earth, with two legs walking around, are not walking around for ourselves, but we are here as a vehicle of this great divine power of reason we call consciousness. Every one of us owe allegiance to it. We're not free. We don't belong to ourselves. We can't kill time. We can't ruin other people's lives by being crabby and cranky and ruining other people's peace of mind. We have no right to do it. And while we're like that great consciousness can never manifest us. Therefore, our life will be a chaos and a confusion and a regular hell. When we learn that we're here to express wisdom, that love and understanding of the great divine consciousness, understanding is a word we should think of a lot. Understanding the other person, understanding yourself, understanding what you should be doing and how to do it. And understanding how you should be helping that other person to do the thing that they should be doing. But first, work on yourself. And so as your mind evolves, first of all, it goes into desire. Children, youngsters want things, so they have them. They learn with proper tuition, besides receiving, that we should be giving. We are only receiving when we're in the student stage. We learn to realize that the things of the senses are only temporal, they don't give you the power pleasure you thought they would, you know, and after a while you begin to think there must be something better in life than just receiving things, gifts like that. Then you learn to give gifts, to make other people happy, then you begin to remember how happy you were and someone gave you something. So you now put someone else in your place and say, well, if it made me happy, then I'm going to make someone else happy. And so we gradually grow in stature until we begin to realize that just giving little fiddling gifts is in itself a starting point, but the greatest thing is to give wisdom. Something will alleviate misery and suffering and bring peace and love on the earth and so forth. Then we begin to think, well, by gosh, it's our duty to do that. If we're told in the scriptures, we were given dominion. We are the steward. Well, why aren't we doing it? Well, perhaps that's the reason we're in the state it is, because we're all blind to the fact we should be doing something. And then, of course, the people have been taught to do wrong things and build up a desire for the wrong things, like you build up in the mind of a child a desire for rock and roll. Only because the youngsters never had any decent music in your life. As parents, you failed in the education of children and the musical of playing. You failed to teach those children by having in your home good music. As a very young child, good music. Teaching to love and to like good music through association. And they grow up and they get the idea that rock and roll amuses them. Because, well, there's nothing been placed. There's no foundation of culture in the child. So he just falls for what seems to stimulate his emotions best. So that the child teaches the child to appreciate good music, teach him to understand rhythm in a proper sense. That's the starting of the creative power in the child, musical and so forth. It goes on many hundreds of things, trying to bring out art and painting and other things that are sculptured, other things that are part of the creative plane in a lesser way. And after a while, the mind begins, as it masters the lesser things, begins to think of the more spiritual things it can do. Then, after a while, you become selfless. You don't live for self. You don't need for anything. There's nothing you want except you can do some good for some people, or as many people as possible. Then you're getting on the plane of the conscious mind, superconscious mind. You learn to become conscious of life. Learn to be governed by certain laws, consciousness. Now you're applying it. Now you're bringing to being a superconscious power. Your little tiny mind is now being, mortal mind is being led to the great source of consciousness, because that spark of consciousness within you is a part of its source. So therefore, as when your mind begins to lift itself and wondering about life in a more spiritual sense, what is our duty? Why, you begin to feel the answer coming from the great source, because now your mind has put itself in a position. You're wondering, what can I do to serve? We must be here for purpose, but none of us are following our purpose. What is that purpose? You're not asking God as a person, but you're just asking your mind, what is that purpose? What is man here for? Is he here for wholesale destruction? You're asking a question, and then you begin to think of it. What could we be here for? Then, of course, we think of the word balance. Balance. We know that everything is balanced in the great universe. We know that we don't have to sit and pray that the old earth will carry around the sun and not stop. We know it will. But then we begin to say to ourselves, well, then what carries the earth around? We're not thinking about it. What if it allows the earth to travel down its orbit, the sun? Then your mind is lifted, just as you begin to wonder about the process, the reasoning process of being. And then you begin to search into the relationship between mind and the pure reason itself, or the source of wisdom, which is the conscious mind that keeps all the whole world traveling. But we have been placed on this earth as being given dominion. We are like the foreman. This great conscious power looks after the evolution of life and the planetary movement. But we are upon the earth, on this earth now, to coincide our thinking with those great planetary movements. And with that great force and power that keeps the universe in order. And through our concept, we conceive it. And as we learn to conceive things, then we become closer to that great source that is doing the thing we're trying to conceive. So as we try to conceive that the great power is working in many ways, our mind's getting closer and closer and closer, you see, and then the first thing you know, why you'll begin to release these thoughts. You feel them coming. Thoughts all over, all around. Thoughts of what they are right. Reams you can write. Pouring into you just like that. Because your mind is at last lifted above the little things, and now has found almost perfect union. You've become one with the Father. And that's what we're trying to do. And become one with that great source. And we do, why? And you fulfill your purpose. And then, by that time, your mind is no longer mundane. your name is no longer mortal. You've left individuality behind as part of the earth, part of your growth. You all went through kindergarten at one time, every one of you grown up people, and you finally graduated. But it's a part of your growth and part of your evolution. And when you reach that point, when you have nothing to die to leave behind, your mind has overcome the earth, your mind has become spiritual in its concept. So therefore, it's become one with the Father long before you die. That's what it should do. The sooner you become one with the Father, the greater help your peace to the rest of the world. That's all it is. Just find out your path and fulfill it. You know, it's long enough. Well, the rest of these questions I'll carry over to the next.
The founder of the Cavalier Philosophy, Mr. Alfred J. Parker, a very inspiring man. We have upcoming announcements. On Thursday, the 5th of November, we have the Cavalier Men's Club and the Cavalier Women's Club meetings here at 7:30 p.m. at 5912. And this coming weekend, we have no functions, but the weekend following, we have one of our special annual events, the Friday the 13th from 3 to 9 p.m. and Saturday the 14th from 10 to 4 p.m., the Cavalry and Craft Fair. I believe it's the 64th annual Cavalry and Craft Fair. And out in the foyer, we have some specially printed postcards, which we would like you to take as many as you would like and to give them to your friends and contacts. Students are the greatest form of advertising, so please ensure you distribute as many as you can to family and friends. And they can come in crafts and gifts and baking, preserves, coffee, and a tea bar. So that's and there's a buffet dinner on Friday night as well, and the menu is right here. Great opportunity to invite contacts to share with our Cavalier and Fellowship. And the morning, the Sunday morning, following the craft fair, we have a morning philosophy as well, and followed by a brunch, so we get to eat again. That week, there is a special nine-day opportunity time, a time when Cavalarians all together put out some little extra effort, whether it's diet or breathing or study, some kind of focus to just add a little bit of extra discipline to their lives, add a little bit of extra effort. And when we're doing it all together, we benefit from that group power. So look forward to seeing you at the Cavalarian Craft Fair. I'd just like to remind anyone, especially those out on the teleconference, that if you have questions that you want to have discussed in some of the presentations by our speakers, the email address is talktopics@cabalarians.com. That's talktopics@cabalarians.com. We like to finish the morning by bringing ourselves together in a song and inspiring through the audio range again. And we will sing song number 3, A Little Seed Lay Fast Asleep. Thank you, Stephanie. Have a great week, folks.